And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, and sadly, for the first time since we started doing this show, I am not joined this week by my co-host, Aaron Varola. Aaron is with his family after the passing of his father over the weekend. And, you know, Aaron, my thoughts are with you and your family. Stay strong, brother. I know you have the support of the entire Fanboy Garage family and the Revenge of the Fans family. And I look forward to being able to talk to you again about much less significant but fun things next week when you return to the show. But I am joined this week by a special guest, someone I've wanted to have on the show for a while now. We go way back to the days before podcasts were a thing and internet radio shows were a thing. He is Paul Crockett of the Foreign Aces podcast, and he's also the play-by-play voice of Beyond Wrestling and Women's Wrestling Revolution. He's on here to talk about AEW and the changing landscape of pro wrestling. So, Paul, welcome to the Fanboy Garage.
First of all, you lied. You said we were going to talk Star Trek and X-Files, so I'm very upset that you've brought me in under false pretenses, but I guess we can talk about AEW.
Yeah, we could probably. Well, you know what? Well, I'm sure we'll fit in some Star Trek towards the end, but yeah, AEW is causing a little bit of a stir here. And the reason why I wanted to do this episode, this is our first wrestling-centric episode that we've ever done, is because my Twitter timeline was just feed blew up when this past week with all the AEW Double or Nothing stuff with that, the ticket party and all that. And I actually saw people that I didn't even know were wrestling fans talking about wrestling. And I discovered that they were wrestling fans just because of all the hype that AEW is generating right now.
Yeah. It's a real credit to what these guys are doing that they've been able to generate so much interest and buzz and to do it essentially alone. This has been a real grassroots effort, particularly by the Young Bucks, and then Cody has joined in, Adam Page has joined in, Marty Scurll, even though he's with another company for the time being, and all these guys came together and created this thing that just got this buzz and all of this, like I said, grassroots effort behind it. And I feel like the reason that this is getting so much buzz and so many people are getting excited again is because the WWE has just been doing the same thing essentially since 1996, 97. I mean, whenever Raw became Raw is War in the War Zone, the format of that show hasn't changed that much. It's not the Attitude Era anymore, but it's essentially the same show, and it's like you've been watching the same thing for so long that I feel like there are a lot of fans out there who feel disenfranchised. So good on them, and good on Tony Khan and his family money for going, excuse the pun, all in on wrestling. And it's going to be interesting to see where it actually goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that with WWE. So I've pretty much tuned out WWE. I will occasionally watch NXT, more so the takeovers. But there were two reasons. One was the whole Saudi Arabia thing, which was one thing, but the other thing was just the product. I mean, you're right. How many versions of, or manufactured versions of, Austin versus McMahon are we going to keep getting with authority figures and all that stuff? It really, nothing has changed, but AEW is a breath of fresh air, and it's grassroots, but it's grassroots with serious money behind it, which helps.
Yes, that definitely helps a lot. And that's what's been missing over the years. Is you look at Ring of Honor, they were bought by Sinclair Broadcasting, but Sinclair, who has plenty of money to spend, yes, isn't going to spend the amount of money it would take to go in there and not necessarily go head to head with WWE, but to maybe be a viable alternative on a big level. And that's the thing that's been missing, is competition, because WWE for years has been stating that their competition isn't any other wrestling organization. It's sports, it's other television, it's streaming, it's all these different things, but they've never had another wrestling company to come in and kind of push their buttons and to challenge them. And this is potentially what AEW can do. Now, they've gotten off the ground great. They had that press conference the other day in Vegas that looked good, but they still don't have that television deal done yet, and I feel like that's the final big step before we can really put our full weight behind this as far as being very excited for an alternative.
Yeah, and just for, I mean, I mentioned sort of a couple of weeks ago in answer to a question on the show, I mentioned the history of AEW, but let's just recap it a little bit for people who may be listening for the first time or who just didn't hear that segment of the show. So this whole thing started, like Paul said, with a group of wrestlers, basically called the Elite, right? The Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, Kenny Omega, and then people like Hangman Page joined, Marty Scurll joined later on, and they started a, well, they were working New Japan Pro Wrestling, something you're very familiar with, and also Ring of Honor, right, which have a working relationship, and they started a YouTube show called Being the Elite, which, I mean, talk about the ultimate grassroots thing. I mean, that thing took off and had like hundreds of thousands of views and, you know, became one of the better wrestling television shows, for lack of a better term, that was out there. And it just started generating this incredible hype. And all of a sudden you're seeing T-shirts all over the place and you're starting to hear people talking about things that happened on Being the Elite, and storylines from Being the Elite were being introduced in Ring of Honor and New Japan, things like that. And all of a sudden these guys became a group, and they decided to, I guess on a bet with Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, who said that Ring of Honor would never be able to draw 10,000 fans, Cody and the Young Bucks basically took it upon themselves to say, well, we're going to run our own show and try to draw 10,000 fans and show you that it could be done. And they did that. That was All In, which in a sense was sort of the pilot for what became All Elite Wrestling, I guess you could say.
In some ways, I don't, there was definitely the ball rolling between them and the Khans as far as mutual interest at that point. But I think if you look at the fact that their pre-show was on WGN America, they definitely had the idea in their head of, okay, let's see what we can do with this.
Yeah. And I mean, look, what's great about what's now become AEW. So I guess somewhere along the way between that and that, so the Khan family gets involved. Tony Khan is, I guess, a big wrestling fan. His father, they own the Jacksonville Jaguars, right, of the NFL. They're worth, like, what, $6 billion or something?
They also own Fulham Football Club in England, which is based in London.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, there's serious money here in this family. Yes. And so Tony Khan, I guess, is going to be the guy who's sort of the Vince McMahon, for lack of a better term, of the promotion, while Cody and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega sort of run the creative end and the talent end of the company. It's one of the great success stories, again, in theory anyway. We don't know what this thing is going to become, but these guys all bet on themselves and they all stayed together. And if this thing, just based on the buzz that they're generating right now, it's already, you got to think of it as a great success story. And the money that they've been able to make off merchandise, you know, things that I think have gotten lost in the WWE monopoly, because WWE now is so much just about bottom line and TV deals and things like that, that the idea of pro wrestling being something where people want to buy tickets and want to buy merchandise and want to buy product, as opposed to just subscribing to a network and tuning in, that's been lost. And AEW now seems to be, that's the goal, right? I mean, that's what how these guys are making their money, on merchandise and ticket sales and hype.
Yeah, that's the way they've been doing it so far, is just using things like that to try to build up a name. And they've been showing up at random independent shows over the last few weeks on their own dime to keep the interest going. And they've been trickling out talent signings shortly, and the buzz it's generated in other companies from, you know, all the names of now. There's never been a time since probably the late 90s in WCW and WWE where people were really interested to know when certain people's contracts are up. That hasn't been a thing,
right,
in a really, really long time, because frankly, there was no need to. So now you have people saying, well, when are the Revival up? Dean Ambrose is leaving WWE in April, and WWE actually announced that themselves, which is something that they just generally don't do. And now you hear behind the scenes that WWE now wants to put more emphasis on the tag team division, which is something they've never done. But you also hear of guys who are getting better offers. So it's really created interest on more than one level, not just the wrestling level, but the behind the scenes aspect of things, where for a long time it was of interest, but only to the most hardcore fan. Now a lot of people want to know, well, who's going where, which is great for the business overall.
Yeah, and the reason why the tag team thing is kind of significant is because the Young Bucks have made it clear that tag team wrestling is going to be a focal point for AEW. And they haven't been shy about talking about that. And the Revival is a team that they've kind of had a little bit of like a feud with, right? Through being the Elite. So the thought has always been that the Revival, who had asked for their release from WWE prior to just winning the tag team titles, the thought was they would wind up jumping to AEW to finally get that match with the Young Bucks. So WWE is clearly noticing this, and they're, you know, the great thing about this is, and I saw people complaining about, oh, AEW, you know, we wish Kenny Omega went to WWE, or we wish this, we wish that. And it's like, look, if you don't see this potentially as a win-win for everybody, because there are now more places for wrestlers to work and actually make a living as full-time pro wrestlers than there have been in a long time. And it's, so that's good, and that's better for the fans, because now you have competition, so it's going to push everybody, and you're going to be able to get better talent because there is more than one destination for wrestlers. So I can't see this as anything but a win-win for the entire wrestling industry, with few exceptions. I mean, yeah, there'll be certain companies maybe that struggle a little bit because of this, because now the talent's going to be spread out more. But I don't know. I mean, do you see this as being anything but a win-win?
As far as the talent goes, there's no question that for the boys and ladies, but we'll just say all the boys, it's fantastic, because you look at a team like the Usos, I'll use for example, they're coming up very soon. And if this AEW thing didn't exist, WWE would go to them and say, here's what we're offering. And they would go, all right. I mean, they could theoretically leave and go on the indies and see what they could do if they really wanted to hustle very, very hard. And that is not an easy thing to do, to go from WWE, where everything's taken care of. All you got to do is show up at the building. And I don't want to, you know, belittle the fact that showing up to the building is very hard work too. I'm just saying all the other factors that go into being a wrestler are taken care of for you in WWE. You could go and hustle, and you can try to make a lot of money there. And some people have done it, but it's very hard and it's not guaranteed. But now for guys like this, who also were a tag team, where in WWE, there's really not much emphasis put on it. Now they have the option of, well, not only could we go to AEW and make great money, but we could do it on a platform that's going to put us in a main event, yes, that's going to give us a high-profile spot. So it's for guys like that, and for guys who the WWE system wouldn't look at for years, it's great for them too, because not only does it give them somewhere else to work, but now WWE is way more open-minded than they've ever been as far as what talents they will take on. And now that they're in acquisition mode, people who may not have been signed for years are being signed. Look at ACH.
Yes.
That's a guy with so much talent.
Absolutely.
So much ability over the ring that was squandered by Ring of Honor.
Yep.
And now he's in WWE. He was just announced yesterday. So it's a huge benefit for all the boys. And I'm hoping that it's going to be a benefit for viewers who, quite frankly, have been alienated.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at even that new crop of WWE signees, like you said, ACH, a guy who's, you know, he left Ring of Honor and again, he kind of bet on himself, but he was, you know, working indies, you know, and now he's signed. And Trevor Lee, I mean, Trevor Lee's a guy who, you know, Impact was his best option at one point if he wanted to have a contract and be on television. Now he's with WWE. And even look at Ring of Honor. I mean, Ring of Honor goes on a tear. They sign Brody King. They sign PCO, they sign Bandito and Roosh, and they sign Mark Haskins. I mean, so they're in acquisition mode as well, too, because they need to replenish their roster after they've lost access to the elite. These are all good things for the talent. And then you even have smaller companies like MLW, right, which are signing guys to contracts. I mean, you know, they're not going to be making a full-time living working for MLW, but they at least have some steady dates coming in. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all good news for talent. I mean, and I think in turn it's good for the fans, because now you're going to, the talent is going to continue to be there. I mean, if you think about it, like take a look at people like Ricochet, right? For instance, or Adam Cole, guys like that, that are fantastic. You know, NXT, maybe if AEW was around a year ago, they might be main, you know, they would be main eventers for AEW.
Mm-hmm.
It, rather than being in NXT, and their main eventers in NXT, but like NXT was their best option at one point. And now it's not.
So guys, you could say.
Yeah. And so, and that's a great thing.
100% great thing. But I will play a little devil's advocate,
okay,
because I don't want it to be, you know, all peaches and cream, because I'm a downer of a human being, Chris. That's just how I am. So I'm going to play with it a little bit.
Okay.
There are two things that I think AEW needs to be wary of and aware of and make sure they don't fall into these trappings. Now, a couple of things they need to be wary about in that sense is that they need to be sure that nepotism doesn't overrun them. Now, they have a lot of family members involved. I know Dana Massey is involved with selling of the merchandise, and obviously, Brandi Rhodes is going to be involved with the women's division. They're all very smart people there. I'm sure they're aware of that. But there is that sense amongst the boys to take care of the boys. And I understand that. But they have to be wary of that, because that can end up becoming its own animal and eventually eating itself.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it this morning. My concern, and this is long-term, obviously. I mean, they haven't run their first official show yet. But, you know, just like what you talked about with the fact that this is sort of being run by, you know, these guys who've been together and they're the talent, but they're also going to be running the creative side, you know, and booking the angles. And, you know, with, you know, like you said, with, you know, family running aspects of the company and stuff, and with all that money behind it, you start to worry a little bit thinking long term about, like, okay, is this going to become like a WCW type of thing one day, where we start to see a pattern where the same people wind up getting put over, they hesitate, you know, not making the elite like the stars of the company, like, will the money get to them, will they just start signing guys left and right? Like, do you see, I mean, that potential is there. I'm not really trying to think too much about it right now, because I like a lot of what I'm seeing, but there certainly are some red flags aside from the fact that they don't have a TV deal yet. And we're not sure exactly what this thing is going to be as far as schedules and how often they're going to run shows. I mean, the only thing we know right now is they have a show on May 25th.
Right. I think there's going to be a lot of trial and error when it comes to that. The plus side for them is they have a lot of money to play with, to have failures in certain areas and learn from it. And I don't say failures as if, oh man, I want these guys to fail, I want things to be bad. No, it's just when you're running a business, there's going to be failures. And the big point from there is, do you learn from them? Are you self-aware enough to be able to say, okay, this was bad, we need to fix it or make a couple of tweaks? And I think all of those guys there are smart enough and aware enough of history and have the right people in their ears as far as telling them about history to be able to do that. So I'm confident that they can learn from mistakes if and when they make them.
Right. And, you know, I'd like to think that that's the case. I don't know much about their wrestling savvy, you know, as far as, I mean, we know Cody Rhodes, we know what his pedigree is at least. You know, we're not sure about the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. I mean, we know Kenny Omega, he's big on having his own, you know, creative freedom, right? So I think he had a big hand in a lot of his stuff, even with New Japan. You would know better than I would on that. But, I mean, so we don't really have a feel either, as, unless we're going to look at All In as being that blueprint for what this thing is going to be. We don't know what exactly this thing is going to look like, you know, once it's on TV.
Right. And another thing that I worry about a little bit is there going to be a lot of hokiness? You know, at All In, I think the biggest glaring thing for me was the whole Joey Ryan stuff. And and I understand that that has its popularity on social media. But to me, the big picture as far as this company is, can they draw in those casual fans? Because it's one thing to go on wrestling Twitter and to be able to generate buzz amongst that bubble of people. It's another to put a show on a major network, whether it's cable or elsewhere, and to be able to draw in people who are just, maybe they heard about it casually, maybe they're flipping through the channels, whatever it may be, because that is where the real money is made. And if you look back at the history of wrestling, that is the big case. You're not going to be able to sustain long-term business unless you can keep that casual fan audience afloat. Maybe I'm wrong because WWE just signed a $20 billion deal with Fox. But
right.
I think you agree with me overall as
yes.
far as they need to be able to toe that line between entertaining and just hokey and embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, you're right. The hardcore wrestling audience is only going to carry you so far, right? And we see it with other promotions that are not WWE. They can only get to a certain level based on that hardcore audience. So when you are trying to draw in the casuals, so the Joey Ryan thing that Paul was mentioning was from All In, where, and it was an angle that had built up on being the Elite, right? But Joey Ryan comes out and he has a gimmick where he has a, what his penis basically has,
it's made of iron.
It's made of iron.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And he, so he came out at All In with basically, there were penis people.
Penis
right?
druids.
Penis druids.
On
yeah.
our show. The
there
penis druids, Chris.
Yes. So if you picture what The Undertaker used to come out with, the druids, like he came out with that, but they were penises.
Yeah.
So, just and then,
folks.
Yeah, that caused a stir. Needless to say, not all positive. It was one of the few things that happened at All In that people, even like the, you know, hardcore audience was like, if this actually becomes a thing, like this is the type of stuff you need to stay away from, because this is that thing that if somebody happens to be flipping around, you know, while they're, you know, just watching TV and they see that, like they're probably not sticking with that. And that's one of those things that, you know, wrestling has that stigma to begin with. And I mean, that's like beyond Attitude Era type stuff. WWE could get away with it because they were WWE, but I don't know if you need to be going down that road. And, you know, being the Elite has an audience and it has a thing, but at some point you need to expand that. You need to make it a little bit more inclusive so that anybody can discover your product.
Right. And they've been saying the right thing so far in interviews where they've put an emphasis, and this is Cody and this is Tony Khan too, where they've said, we want a promotion where wins and losses matter,
yep.
which is, and they want it to be more sporting as opposed to sports entertainment. So if they're able to take some of the aspects of what makes New Japan great and what made WCW great up and through the
yes.
late 90s, I think that they'll be able to at least have a product on television that is palatable for an average viewer.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing we forget when we talk about WCW, because there's so much to talk about from those dying days. But the thing that got them hot and got them to, besides the NWO, was also the fact that the cruiserweight division, the emphasis on work rate, bringing in all these top stars that were different from anything else that was happening on wrestling television at that time, at least mainstream television. I mean, ECW was doing it too first, but that's what got them the buzz originally. And then the NWO thing took it to like a whole nother level, but even TNA, which is now Impact Wrestling, but even when TNA, people forget, and it's very easy to forget now, but when TNA first got on Spike TV, even in a late, like a 10 p.m. time slot, right, or whatever it was when they first got on Spike, they were doing almost 2 million viewers at certain points.
Yes.
That was with AJ Styles, which, who now, you know, back then AJ Styles was not a known commodity. It was AJ Styles and like Samoa Joe basically main eventing and feuding, and it was all based on work rate and the X division and how exciting and different it was, and that's what got them there. And once they forgot that, it was never the same. And now look at where we are today with them.
Yeah, well, that's the Russo effect for you. I mean, they had that one fantastic buy rate with Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe, and yep. It was based off, we're two legitimate athletes that want to beat the other guy. And they had those awesome vignettes, and, yes. And they popped that big number, and then Vince Russo be Vince Russo-ing, and that's when it all sort of slowly fell off a cliff. But yeah. There are elements from that hopefully they're going to be able to look at and to be able to build upon it. Because, yeah. You know, for me, the big thing that stood out for WCW and why, looking back on it, I don't have to tell you, ECW was my number one when I was a young man. But now, looking back on it, I have so much more appreciation for WCW and the booking job that Kevin Sullivan did in the mid to late 90s, because it was based off of, well, this guy got a win, so now what's the championship committee going to do in regards to his contendership? Just right. Basic sports-like stuff, yes. That if you're an average viewer, you're going, oh, this is not insulting my intelligence. Okay, I can get behind this.
Right, and that's insulting intelligence. That's what I keep talking about when I think of WWE today. Like, WWE spends so much. Look, we get it, right? We're wrestling fans. We've been wrestling fans for a long time. We know it's fake, right? But so is Law and Order. But Law and Order doesn't stop you in the middle of the episode and let you know these are just actors, right? They don't reinforce things about the show to make you realize that it's quote-unquote fake. WWE spends so much time letting you know that what you're watching is a television show, more so than like any television show I think I've ever seen. And even little things like Vince McMahon's pet peeves, like, well, we can't use belt. Belt is not a thing. It's got to be a title. Even though a title is not a physical thing, you can't call belts belts. You can't call fans fans. You can't call wrestlers right. Wrestlers. Stuff yes. Like that insults my intelligence to the point where it's like, well, I know what I'm watching. You know, I'm watching wrestling. So why can't I just enjoy wrestling? Why do you have to do everything you can to tell me I'm not watching wrestling?
Yeah, it's over-branding is what it is.
Yes.
I understand branding being very important in the modern age, but I also know that there's going overboard. It's, you know, like you said, you can't say the fans, it's the WWE universe. And if you turn on Raw at any point, with the exception of maybe a few guys that I can think of, when you watch it, you know these people are reading lines. They're not trained actors.
Yes.
They go down, and you can have all the promo classes you want down at the PC, and hats off to those guys for the hard work they do down there. But they're not trained actors. They're reading lines that all sound the same. There's no nuance to it at all. It right. Just so happens that sometimes a character says something a little more wackier than the other. And that's one of the big reasons why I hear Dean Ambrose once wanted to leave. But it's one of those things where you watch it and you go, unless you are a hardcore, true and true wrestling fan, and even those fans are being alienated slowly as we see the ratings. But as a casual person, you tune in and be like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
And even though in the ring, I don't think there's ever been a talent pool as big and as great as they have there.
Now. There is an insane amount of talent right now. But, you know, you're right. As far as the promos go, I mean, nobody has a voice. A Stone Cold Steve Austin could never happen today. You know, if you look at the circumstances.
Look at that glitch right now. They're, you know.
You know, look at the circumstances around how that gimmick even really took off and became a thing. You know, just like an off-the-cuff remark that he made in the middle of a promo, that wouldn't have happened because that promo would have been written for him now. And that John 3:16, Austin 3:16 that he just came up with, that wouldn't have been a thing. You know, even The Rock, I mean, people like The Rock wouldn't have been a thing because, you know, The Rock would have been scripted for the way they wanted him to be when he first debuted. And that personality, his natural personality, never would have been allowed to come out. And yeah, that's frustrating to me. But, you know, getting back to AEW for a second, like you're looking at the, because we're trying to figure out, like, what is this thing going to be, right? So there's two things I want to look at. Let's look at the product for a second, because we talked about, you know, our concerns about the direction. But for now, if you look at the card for Double or Nothing, you have Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho, right, in the rematch from their match from New Japan. Then you have the Young Bucks against the Lucha Brothers, right, which is Pentagon Jr. or Penta L0M and Rey Fénix, right? And then you have Hangman Page versus Pac, who some of you may know as Neville from WWE. And there was another match, too. What were some of the other matches? Do you remember? Oh, SoCal Uncensored has a match on there.
It seems like there are some other matches they're building toward, mm-hmm. but they just haven't announced them yet.
Right. So anyway, the point is that's a strong lineup as far as like work rate, right? As far as those matches should all be great on paper anyway. So at least that they have that going for them. I mean, this very much looks like it's going to be like an all-star card as far as talent that is not in WWE right now. And so that's at least a positive. But what do you think this thing winds up becoming if and when they get a television deal? Do you think they wind up being like a WWE type promotion where they're running multiple shows a week? Do you think it's going to be more of like a Ring of Honor thing where they run on weekends just on a larger scale? Or do you think it's going to follow maybe more of like a New Japan model where they run tours where they maybe have some small shows that build to bigger shows and then they take off for a little while?
I think right now the money in the television business is in live weekly programming. I think that's where you're going to make your money, because if you look at what the major cable companies and the networks are shelling out money for, it's all live sports and live programming. So I think that it wouldn't be the worst idea if, you know, they went back and this is something that came up, I think, with Dave Meltzer. I think he was talking to Mike Tenay, and Tenay brought up the point of, well, remember how great the UFC was back in 06, 07, 08,
yep.
where it was one big show a month and you would get really excited for it. And there was no weekly TV outside of maybe the Ultimate Fighter every once in a while, but that could be a model that could work. It's just that I feel as though if a TV network is going to get on board, they want content, and rightfully so, if they're going to shell out money for that. So I think it would end up being a weekly television program. I would hope it would be one show a week at most, if that's how it ends up being. But I also hope that on their end, they still have that one big show, maybe every other month. Maybe you don't even want to do it once a month, but the market will dictate that when it happens. But ideally, I would love to have another situation like you had with the UFC, because I was all on board with the UFC until it got oversaturated. So ideally, as a fan, I would love that. But I think the money would dictate that it's a weekly show.
So you're thinking weekly live show, and then they'll do like their big pay-per-views. And that's going
to
be the model.
I think that would be the model. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, actually, it's funny you talk about the UFC from that period. There was a time there where I actually said to people, like, UFC is doing pro wrestling better than pro wrestling right now, because there was that run there where, like, I mean, they were establishing contenders on shows, and then people would cut promos and get you excited because you knew all the fighters and you knew all the champions, and then it just got out of hand. And now I couldn't even tell you who half of the champions are right now, because it's too much, too many shows. I don't even know how you keep up with it. And so I get what that's like. I get the oversaturation thing. You don't want to do that.
No. I used to go to UFC shows and I used to be excited. And like you, there were five champions and there were like four or five guys who were kind of in the running, and you would see these guys every few months, and that would be perfect. But now that's a whole other different story, though.
Yeah. So here's because I know I want to talk a little bit about the one company here that had been gaining a lot of momentum that I think may potentially be the company that gets affected the most by the existence of AEW, and that is New Japan Pro Wrestling. So, you know, New Japan, which, well, how do you think this affects New Japan as far as, like, do you think that they eventually, like, once Madison Square Garden happens WrestleMania weekend, and they don't necessarily have that loyalty to Ring of Honor, do you think New Japan winds up working with AEW so they can have access to, you know, Kenny Omega and you know, the Young Bucks and Cody if they need them?
Harold May, who is the new president, he went on record and said that they're open to a lot of things, but right now they want to wait and see what AEW actually is before they make a decision on whether or not they want to work with them, which is a very reasonable and very smart as far as a business aspect.
Yeah.
Would they work with them? Maybe, but I know for a fact that they're not very happy by the fact that AEW took Trent Barretta from them. Barretta had a big push coming to him this year, and they had a lot of things mapped out for him, and now that's off the table, and I know they're upset about that. And as you know, being a Japanese wrestling fan for many years, their memory goes way longer than a lot of other places.
Does.
It's just a cultural difference.
Yep.
Where they do not appreciate having things like that happen to them, because according to what I read, Trent Barretta had a verbal agreement and then went back on it and he left. And that is just very, very bad taste over there. So as far as if that builds into them not wanting to work with him, who knows?
Right.
If AEW gets off the ground, a lot of these guys have in their contract, including Kenny Omega, that they can work New Japan still.
Yep.
They can work those dates. How that affects New Japan really depends on how much AEW decides to tour. Could New Japan still come here and run one or two big shows a year? I think so, for sure. But as far as their American expansion, if you go to our show, foreignaces.com, and we had an interview with George Carroll, who was the director of U.S. operations for a year, he goes in depth about all the different things that he wanted to do and he was very proactive about, but the Japanese just shuffled their feet on. And I feel like their expansion has gone a little bit bust. They had three sold out shows a couple weeks ago. They were very small buildings, but they had a visa problem because of the government shutdown. So none of the Japanese talent came. So it's just small little things like that that could build to hurt them in their expansion to the United States. But business is very solid in Japan. You're still going to have that hardcore base that's going to follow them. So I don't think that will be affected.
Yeah, and the thing, you know, with that is that, you know, New Japan's, their expansion into the U.S. was, you have to assume a lot of that was built around Kenny Omega. And the Young Bucks, too, also. But, I mean, Kenny Omega was going to be the guy, you would think, right, that was going to be main eventing if they did expand and start running more regularly in the United States. And you know, yes, even though he can go work for them now, I mean, obviously he's not going to, that's not going to be a thing anymore. Which is why, we're also going to look at Ring of Honor right now, too, because Ring of Honor is in a very interesting position. As you said it earlier in the show, you know, they're owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, which has a ton of money, but has really not invested that much into Ring of Honor, at least not relative. They're happy keeping that company as something that exists to give them programming for their various networks. And, but, you know, a lot of Ring of Honor's growth over the last few years has been due to the elite, right? Due to the, you know, success of the Young Bucks and Cody. And also the fact that, like, look at Madison Square Garden, right? The sellout at Madison Square Garden for the joint show with New Japan, WrestleMania weekend. I mean, let's be honest. That thing sold out because people were really looking at that as sort of being all in too. even though it never officially was. And I think most people bought tickets to that event thinking that, like, Kenny Omega was going to be in the main event and that the Young Bucks were going to be on that show. And that's not going to be a thing anymore. So it's going to be really interesting to see now what happens with Ring of Honor as well going forward.
I think Ring of Honor has had a great working agreement and arrangement with New Japan, and I don't see that changing, just because, also in line with what I mentioned before as far as long memories, they're also a very loyal company.
Yeah.
All the companies over there are very loyalty-based. Occasionally you see a guy or two jump ship, but it doesn't happen very often from company to company in Japan. So I think that they'll stick with Ring of Honor as far as it's viable and it's successful, and it helps their brand in the United States. Another big thing for them is they're going to have a big show in the United Kingdom coming up this summer as well. They're running a 7,000 seater. So that's going to be interesting to see how they do there, but it's going to be an interesting year overall for New Japan, because they did lose all that talent. And well, I should say they lost Kenny, which is their biggest name. The Young Bucks and Cody and Hangman, they would come in once in a while. I don't think that's going to hurt too much, but the Kenny thing is a loss. But Kota Ibushi just came back on the last show and said he's going to be with New Japan for a while. And here's an interesting fact that you may not know. Kota Ibushi hates flying. Hates it. So I think that might be a factor into him staying in Japan. And he also opened up a school there recently. So that may be big for them. But as you saw this past weekend, and in a couple of big examples in years past, Ghetto, who is the booker, the guy in charge of all the decisions creatively at New Japan, he's not afraid to pull the trigger on building new stars. And he did so this past weekend by putting the title on Jay White. Jay White's had the pedigree from the beginning. Since he was a young lion 4 or 5 years ago, I saw that kid and went, oh, okay, this kid has it. He's going to have something. I didn't think it would come this soon, but that's another great calling card of Ghetto, is that he's not afraid to pull the trigger on someone. He did it with Okada 7 years ago. He did it with Kenny Omega two and a half years ago as well. So it's going to be interesting to see if he also pulls the trigger on a couple of other people. So creatively, this is actually more interesting New Japan than it has been in a couple of years, just because there are so many question marks now.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the guys that he took a chance on was Kenny Omega when AJ Styles left, right, and was head of the Bullet Club, and he left to go to WWE. He took a chance on Kenny Omega and made him, basically put him in that role, and obviously that worked out pretty well.
Yes, it worked out very well, and as I mentioned, 7 years ago, people forget, when they put the title on Okada, he'd only been back for a month, and he was on excursion and had that horrible, horrible run in TNA as the Okado, the Hornet knockoff assistant character. So people forget that when they put the title on him, it was a huge shock.
Yes.
And people went, what is this? What are they thinking? And obviously that worked out, because in my opinion, he's the best wrestler on the planet right now. But
I don't think it's a question as far as I'm concerned. But yeah.
A lot of people have their opinions.
Well, sure.
That's fine.
Right. But though.
To me, he's number one.
Yeah. So before we talk a little bit of Star Trek here, since you are the voice of Beyond Wrestling and Women's Wrestling Revolution, let's, for the people who are listening here who may not be that familiar with independent wrestling, or maybe are just starting to get into that now, throw out some names of some, because you do, you know, you see a lot of indie wrestling and some wrestlers who, you know, you've seen guys who are now starting to get contracts for all these different companies when they were still on the indie scene. Throw out some names right now of some people, you know, male and female, that are working the indies that you think are like have a shot at being the, you know, the next people to get some, you know, contract looks.
Oh, I thought you were going in. I thought you wanted me to name some people who, Beyond Wrestling is a company, it's based here in New England, that has been the stepping stone for a lot of careers. It's kind of like the launching pad where you go from working your local Elks lodges, and then you step up to beyond wrestling, and then you're recognized nationally, and then you go to like a PWG, or then you go overseas and get tours, and then you'd get signed by WWE. So even in the last couple of years, I mean, I saw Matt Riddle when he was in his infancy. I saw the match that put Keith Lee on the map. It was in Providence, Rhode Island, this little building. It was him and Dijak, who's now Dijakovic.
I don't know why they felt the need to do that, but yeah.
I don't know. But it is a company where if you make it there, you are going to be on your way to getting signed somewhere. But as far as talents coming up, it's really hard. Like a year ago, it was very easy for me to rattle off a list of names because there were so many independent talents. Whereas now, everybody's getting signed everywhere, so it's kind of harder to make a dent. But some names I will throw out there. Wheeler Yuta, he has been working with MLW occasionally, but he's one of the bigger names in Beyond Wrestling. I think he's 22 years old, just graduated from Villanova University. He's trained by Drew Gulak, so he has a fantastic pedigree about him. Here in New England, there's a kid named Christian Casanova who I think is going to turn a lot of heads in the next year. He works with Northeast Wrestling, which is based in Connecticut. And Northeast Wrestling is the company where Kenny Omega and Phoenix sold out the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie this past summer. Those are two names that stick out to me. As far as female talents, there's Zoe Lucas out of the UK. She's the Rev Pro champion right now. Chris Statlander is a name that I would keep my eye on. She's based out in Long Island. She's had some incredible breakout performances. She is an absolute freak athlete, and she just has picked it up so quickly. So those are some of the names I would look out for in the next year or so.
Okay, very cool. So there you go. So you can listen back to this in a year from now and see if Paul Crockett hit any of these. So let's talk a little Star Trek. So now you, like me, are a big Star Trek fan. You are also one of the few people that also believes, and I think I'm right on this, that Jonathan Archer is the best captain.
I don't know if he's the best captain, but he's my favorite captain. Because, and I know that's sacrilege to a lot of people, but okay, just overall, I feel like Enterprise didn't get its due because it came at the end of this very long string of three different TV series, all these movies, whether it be the final original series movies or the Next Generation movies, where Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and The Next Generation, they were essentially the same show. Now, they were set in different time periods, different characters, different situations, but they were shot the same. They looked the same. They were acted the same. All the sets were the same.
Yeah.
And then here comes Enterprise at the end of this long run. It's not even called Star Trek Enterprise. That came in the later seasons. Right. It was just Enterprise, and it had this really lame theme song, and it was shot differently. And quite frankly, in my opinion, it was acted way better. I feel like the actors, if you go and look at it now, they were given all this time to breathe. They were allowed to really dig deep and to do some real acting. Whereas you look at Voyager and it's literally just bang, 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 line, 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 line. No room to breathe, no room to do anything. Some of the other shows got that, but I feel like Enterprise didn't get its due because I feel like people wanted to hate it right from the rip. They didn't even want to give it a chance. But I feel like with the passage of time, and with some level-headedness, if you go and watch that show, another question people had is it actually Star Trek just because it was so different? It is so Star Trek. It is, at its core, as great as any other Star Trek that was ever made. I just feel like, for me, maybe it was because it was the first Star Trek I watched, but to me, criminally underrated picture was so fantastic because he didn't have the prime directive. He just had to go out there and figure everything out on his own. And I think that's what made it so special.
Yeah. And the thing with Enterprise, and I say this all the time, Enterprise to me was following a similar trajectory to The Next Generation in that the first couple seasons were bumpy. They had their moments, but they were bumpy. Then in the third season, it started to find itself a little bit. And then a new showrunner took over. Manny Coto, who was a big Star Trek fan, took over for season four, which was a great season of Star Trek. Season four of Enterprise is an absolutely great season of Star Trek. And then, unfortunately, the show got canceled. The Next Generation followed a similar path. It wasn't until the end of season three that it really found its footing under the new showrunner. And then from season four on, it became a great show. I think Enterprise, had it gotten those seasons five, six, and seven like the other shows, we would be looking at it much differently right now.
100%. It got its footing, really, with the Zindi arc in season three. But I challenge people to go watch season one of Next Generation and then watch season one of Enterprise.
Yes.
And then get back to me as far as which was the better season. Yeah. Season one and even season two of Next Generation,
rough.
Really not easy to watch.
No, very rough. It clearly did not know what it wanted to be yet. But let's talk about Discovery very quickly because we're running up against it here. Have you been watching season two of Discovery?
Haven't started season two yet. Okay. I did watch season one.
And did you like season one?
I don't want to be a hypocrite because I just talked about people who said, is this Star Trek? But there are a lot of elements to it. And maybe it's just because they're not answering. They didn't answer questions as far as, okay, what timeline are we in? Is this the new movies timeline? Is this the original Star Trek timeline? But there are a lot of small things that kind of bug me. Like, I don't want to be too picky about it, but why do the Klingons look completely different than any other Klingon ever? Like, I understand the original series with the, and that was explained in Enterprise with the genetic mutations and stuff, but stuff like that. And then I'm not against swearing, but it seemed like some of it was a little gratuitous. And then there are all these other small things, like, why did they jump all the way to an alternate universe this early? That's usually something to me that you would save for later down the line when, hey, we're kind of running out of ideas here. What do we do? As opposed to, let's just throw this right out there right now. And I know that leads to season two with Spock and everything, but there are a lot of small little things that made me wonder, like, do I like this? I mean, I do, but I don't love it.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Now, here's another thing. And I ask this now of everybody that I know that's a Star Trek fan. Have you watched The Orville?
I have not. My buddy, who's also a Star Trek fan, told me I need to.
You absolutely need to. I was just telling somebody this the other day. It is not what people think. People thought this was going to be like a complete goof and like a Galaxy Quest maybe type of thing, or straight comedy. This show, and especially in this second season, this is the most Star Trek thing that I've seen in years. I mean, you talk about how Enterprise was very Star Trek. This thing is so much more Star Trek than Discovery is. This is a love letter to Star Trek The Next Generation, but it has really found its footing, especially this season. So you absolutely have to watch that show. I mean, there's comedic moments to it, you know, because it is Seth MacFarlane, but this is really a Star Trek show.
Yeah, he made a couple of guest appearances on Enterprise because he's such a huge fan. And I know he brought in a lot of the directors from series past to kind of give it that touch. So,
yeah.
It's definitely on my list.
And there's a lot of, especially this season, some people, you're starting to see a lot of Star Trek cast members pop up too in roles too, which is fun.
Nice.
So, Paul, thanks for coming on. Listen, why don't you get some plugs in here for all of your various endeavors? I know you have many.
Yes. Go to Beyond Wrestling on Twitter. That's the place to keep up with our promotion. We're going to be running on the 23rd at the Sportatorium in New York at Deer Park, New York, Long Island. That's Women's Wrestling Revolution. We're going to have Chris Statlander against Victoria, Lisa Marie Verone, who's doing her retirement tour right now. So that is going to be a match you don't want to miss. And then on the 24th, the next day, we're going to be in East Greenwich, Rhode Island for Beyond Wrestling. We're going to do a one-day tournament. So those are always fun, but you can catch me at Hello Crockett on Twitter and Instagram and foreignaces.com. If you have Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you get your podcast, just type in Foreign Aces. It's me, Matt Camp from the Bleacher Report and SiriusXM. So if you like your fantasy football, he's with us, but he's a huge New Japan fan as well. And I cannot forget my man, the choice, Christopher Cornwell Boyce, because without him, I wouldn't have the Foreign Aces. He was there with me at the beginning when I needed someone. So shout out to him and to you, Chris, because I'll try to make this short, but I was 15 years old. You were doing Strictly ECW Hardcore Radio, and you went on the air and you said, "Hey, somebody out there, we need an intro for our show. Somebody do that." And for the first and maybe last time in my life, I showed some initiative and I created that show intro. And that's how I know you guys, you and Mike Johnson and Ed Cleveland. That's how, and G Nice and Tony Lewis. That's how I know all you guys still. So thank you, because you were the one who kind of got that ball. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't know Mike Johnson. I wouldn't have gotten on PW Insider and been able to make all the headway I have in wrestling. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you, because you were a big help in getting this show off the ground, helping me out with some of the technical aspects of it and whatnot. So so I'll return that thank you. And, you know, we're going to have to do this again soon. Maybe we'll come have you back on and do an all Star Trek episode.
Yes. And we'll we need to do an Enterprise episode.
Yeah,
I'm in season 8 of the X-Files right now. So if you want to do X-Files, throw it at me.
Yeah, we're up for all of that. So we'll definitely have you. We'll do this again soon. So thanks again, man.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, so thanks again to Paul Crockett for joining us here on the show. But right now, we got something very exciting. We have a little bit of a round table here, or to put it into wrestling terms, a four-corner survival that we're going to do right now.
It wouldn't be a squared circle?
Right.
We got
right.
that, too. We have a lot of references we could throw out here. But we have three wrestling fans who also happen to be part of the Fanboy Garage family joining us today on the show for the first time. This is very exciting. So we have Phil Guljar.
Hello.
We have, now this is a guy you know, because he's asked some amazing questions. You've heard this name, Nathan Odinson from Twitter. What is your Twitter handle?
WobblyBoots85.
There you go. This guy, that Batman Beyond thing that you hit us with that show, something I still think about, but welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And of course, last but certainly not least, the guy who is the catalyst, one of the catalysts for this thing even being a thing, one of the guys who inspired Aaron and I to even decide to pick up microphones and do this podcast. I'm actually going to let him introduce himself, because he has also has a special guest with him today. Why don't you go and introduce yourself, final guest?
All right. Hi. Yes. My name is Tavo. I go by in Twitter by Tavo Borrego, first and last name. And my special guest is my daughter, Adriana.
Hi.
There you go. So, Tavo, welcome to the show. It's been a long time coming. It's great to have you on here, actually.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Yeah. So, we're talking about wrestling fandom. And the reason why is because this past week, my Twitter timeline blew up with a lot of wrestling talk, mainly because of AEW and all the hype that they're generating right now. There were people that I didn't even know were wrestling fans that I'm finding out were wrestling fans just because of all the AEW buzz that's been going on right now. And so I just wanted to start off by, we'll send it around the horn here a little bit. Let's talk about your wrestling fandom. When did your wrestling fandom first begin? So, Phil, let's start with you.
My wrestling fandom started probably before I can even remember. You know, my dad came to this country back in the 70s. Late 70s. So his guy was Bruno. And we got to give a shout out. We have to take a moment of silence, I think, because Pedro Morales passed away today. First WWF IC champion. Yeah. So moment of silence for the man.
First triple crown, man.
So, you know, Bruno and superstar Billy Graham, that was my dad's time. And then, you know, my dad tells me this story that he took me to the first WrestleMania as a kid. I don't remember. I mean, at the time I was probably 4, but I do recall my first WrestleMania, and that was WrestleMania 3. and I was at Madison Square Garden, and I was watching it on closed circuit. My first live WrestleMania was WrestleMania 10, and I think around, you know, around that time, my fandom really grew. I mean, I was a Hogan, I was a Hulk Hogan fan, and I'm sure everybody else in the '80s was. But as you know, as I got older, my taste got more sophisticated. I definitely started watching NWA. And I think one of the first guys outside of Hogan that really resonated with me was Ricky the Dragon, especially at WrestleMania 3. And him, the match between him and Savage was still phenomenal to this day. I think the biggest thing that drew me was that he was a person of color. And seeing somebody, person of color, grab a title and just have an excellent match, I loved him ever since. So even when he left WWF, now WWE, I went down to NWA, had those three classic matches with Rick for the NWA title. I mean, those Iron Man matches, which just blew me out of the water. So that's a kind of deep level kind of history I got with wrestling. You know, like I said, 80s was Hogan was my guy. 90s, a flip-flop between Brett and Michaels, but then in the late 90s came Austin. I was never a Rock guy. Though I love the guy, and I've met him a few times. Spoiler alert, I used to work at WWE for about 7 years.
Nice, man. So,
really?
Awesome.
Yeah, so I quit about a year and a half ago, so I'm at someplace else. So I've worked there for a number of years, so I've met a lot of guys in my time. I've worked with Steph, I've worked with Hunter, I've met Vince many of times. So I've worked, seen a lot of the guys. But, you know, Austin was my guy. Then the early 2000s, you know, you got Cena, you got Batista, you got Orton. And Hunter. And I think that's when, I think in my college years, I kind of waned a little bit during that time period. And then I jumped back in right before I started back up, I started working there. So then, you know, Punk was my dude. Loved him. Sad to see him go. And now we're in this new era where it's an interesting time because, you know, I mean, I'm sure we're going to get into it more, but it's an interesting time where this new dynamic is growing. And I can talk a lot about it because I was at WWE when the talk of the women's revolution was happening behind the scenes. Yeah. And this is, I mean, now you guys are seeing the fruition of that, because when I started there 7 years ago, we were talking about it then. At the time we just didn't kind of have the roster or the people. So that's kind of my deep love of fandom, but you know, I'll pass it over.
Well, I'm going to jump in here just because the beginning of our journey is not that much different, actually. So my first live wrestling event was actually December 1985. It was the first ever Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage match at Madison Square Garden, right after Savage had joined the WWF at the time. And my first WrestleMania live was WrestleMania 2. I was at Nassau Coliseum. So WrestleMania 2 was in three locations. It was in Nassau Coliseum in New York. It was in the Rosemont Horizon in, well, quote-unquote Chicago. And it was out at the Los Angeles Sports Arena in L.A. And so I was at the Nassau Coliseum, and you got four matches live, and then you watched, like, the rest of the show on the closed-circuit screen. And then WrestleMania 3 for me was the first pay-per-view I ever watched. Not that I had pay-per-view at the time, but my friend did. His house was wired for cable at that time, literally down the block. My block didn't have it yet. His house did. And they ordered WrestleMania 3. We had a big party at his house for that show. So the beginnings of our journeys are not that much different. And then I too sort of discovered the NWA once I got cable and was able to watch, you know, Superstation TBS 605 Saturday nights. And then, like, all the different, like, by then you had the Clash of the Champions, and they were doing pay-per-views at that time. And you know, obviously it was a much different product than WWF at that time. It was a little bit more exciting, a little bit more realistic, little bit more of a work rate type thing. So yeah, our journeys are similar, but we'll get into my fandom. Never really kind of tailed off that much. I kind of always have been a wrestling fan. This right now is probably the least interest I've had in wrestling in a long time, although it's starting to pick up again for me. And just so we know, in the 90s, which is how I wound up meeting Paul, who I had on earlier, I got involved with a fan organization called Strictly ECW, which was started with a bunch of us out of New York that got together to try to get ECW wrestling back on the air in New York on MSG Network. They had gotten taken off the air due to content. And me and a couple of friends, a friend of mine really was the one who spearheaded the whole movement, and then I joined on, and we wound up becoming like the unofficial official fan organization of ECW, to the point where we had our own internet audio show that we did, and we used to have like wrestlers show up in the quote-unquote studio, which was my friend's basement. And that was where my journey really took off at that point, and I became even more passionate about it then because, you know, we had really gotten involved at a grassroots movement. But let's go over to Nathan. So when was the beginning of your fan journey in wrestling?
Well, I'm a little bit younger than you guys. I was born in 85, so I'm 33. So, I was in middle school, and like I grew up in the country and the sticks and stuff, and like I'm in middle school and I start hearing all these kids, like I start seeing them wearing these NWO shirts and like just talking about this stuff. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, oh, it's just wrestling, man. Like, you got to check it out. It's on the TV. Well, I didn't have cable or nothing. My mom finally got cable, and I didn't even know what channel it was on. So I flip on the TV and I'm looking for WCW, obviously, you know, check out this NWO and all that stuff. But I stumble across WWE, or WWF at the time. And when I turn it on, the first thing I see, it's like late 97, is Kane comes out in all his glory and his fire and the red mask and his whole thing. And instantly, me being 13, I was just mesmerized and went, what is this? And I sat down and I watched the whole show. And I mean, this is the beginnings of the corporate ministry, which I thought was fantastic because I'm a huge, you know, superhero fan. And these guys are larger than life, just like my comic book characters. And, you know, they're flashy colors and they're big guys and they're doing all this crazy stuff. And then I see The Undertaker going and, you know, they're pulling that mystical element. And I mean, I was hooked in there, hook, line, and sinker. And I was with WWF and that's all I knew. And then I started finding out about, you know, WCW. And I kind of started going over to just checking out all the, just anything I could find, you know. And I stayed with WWF for a long time. I mean, Triple H has always been my guy. I've been Triple H since he was the sidekick to HBK. DX, Triple H's version of DX, is my all-time favorite stable, hands down. It'll never be beaten in my book. China, Triple H, The Outlaws, X-Pac, that's my DX. You know, fast forward going through, I stuck with it all the way through with the Invasion stuff. I loved it. When I found out about ECW, that was a whole shock to my system, and I loved it. I was a Paul Heyman guy before I knew what a Paul Heyman guy was. You know, I mean, I was with the voice of the voice of the voiceless before I even knew what any of that crap was. And I saw that, you know, and Rob Van Dam blew my mind when I saw what this guy could do and get folded in half and stand up straight, and I blew my mind. So I went all the way through Austin. I mean, I stuck with it, and then like you guys, I kind of fell out as I got in my later teenage years, just because of life. And let's see, I think I jumped back in when TNA was finally starting to give WWE a little bit of run for their money. Whenever TNA, if you wanted tag team action or women's wrestling, TNA was the only place to really find it. And the more I think about it, I've always been a tag team guy. I love watching guys work together, and just tag teams are my thing. And I started watching them for that. And then, I was around for the Evolution era. I loved Evolution, but like I kind of fell out with WWF when TNA was kind of giving them the run for their money, just because they had more of that appeal to it. It seemed more of that, a little more real life stuff. And then I went through, and in the last couple of years, I fell completely out, just because, I mean, WWE's free to do what they want, but I didn't like the decisions they were making. I loved NXT. I thought it was the hottest thing going, and you'd see these guys make all this great progress. And then I felt like when they got moved up, you know, it just didn't go through. I don't know. So I fell out with it. But when this AEW was announced, like, oh, my God, my level went through the roof and I started seeing all this stuff. And I mean, I've been more hyped now in the last week, 2 weeks than I've been in the last 2 years. And I think my wife would have preferred if I didn't find out about AEW because it's all she's heard is wrestling, wrestling, wrestling.
Well, and as a fan of tag team wrestling, I think you're going to start to really like a lot of what you're seeing going forward. One of the things that we talked about in the prior segment is the fact that AEW has basically made it known that they're going to put a heavy emphasis on tag team wrestling because the Young Bucks are in such a prominent role with that company. And in turn, WWE just so happened this week to have a very long tag team title match on Raw where they changed the titles and they put the belts on the Revival, who had already asked for their release because they were basically headed to AEW to actually live out the feud that they've been teased having on being the Elite with the Young Bucks. And magically, WWE decided to put the belts on them now, not give them their release, and they're going to start maybe emphasizing tag team wrestling a little bit. So go figure. But so I think you're going to start to enjoy a lot of what you see now as a fan of tag team wrestling. But we'll get into the current stuff in a little bit. But let's get to Tavo and hear where your journey began.
All right, so basically I don't know if I would be like the senior citizen here. I'm not sure yet. I'm 45 right now. But the thing is, like, unlike you guys, my journey began in Puerto Rico. So when I heard about Pedro Morales, you know, that really hit me, you know, because he was one of my first idols to actually watch. Every time he went with that... the clapping thing, man, I just pumped my fist up. Yeah, man! You know? So that was, you know, he was great. He was awesome. So basically, my journey began here. They began in Puerto Rico with it was called Capital Sports Promotion over there. And Carlos Colon, who happens to be the father of Carlito Caribbean Cool, you guys remember him? He was like the owner, you know, of that. And around the 80s, I wouldn't say like a huge promotion, but it was like, you know, Disney, like, good enough to actually get people like, say, Andre the Giant to come to Puerto Rico. And I actually got to see Andre the Giant. You know, my dad drove me, you know, small island, of course, but let's just say he drove me like hour and a half with my brother just to see Andre the Giant. And that was awesome, by the way, for the record. That was very impressive. That guy, huge. And then after that, I did get, you know, obviously Hulk Hogan, you know, an 80s kid, you know, through and through. But at the same time, I was also watching, I forgot the name of the promotion. It was the Von Erichs.
World Class.
World Class, yes. Mm. And oh my God, watching the Fabulous Freebirds. Terry Bam Bam Bill. Oh my God, that guy was Terry Bam Bam Gordy. That was my dude. He was amazing. And so that was like, you know, pretty much all my childhood. Then yes, I started seeing like the NWA stuff, which was awesome. Like you said, Ricky the Dragon. That dude, you know, he was amazing. And those matches with Ric Flair, you know. Those were some of the greatest matches I've ever seen. You can even tell that both of them, like, you know, had like this chemistry in the ring, you know, storytelling wise. Oh my, that, you know, that just by looking, they knew what each other, you know, what each other was thinking and what they wanted to do at the same spots in certain spots, which, you know, you see the wrestlers today, they don't seem to have that kind of chemistry nowadays. I mean, it's very, very few of them like that actually can do that. It went to like got to the 90s, and then NWO. Yeah, that, you know, that got me. I was in college during that period, and that really got me like going, you know, to like, you know, watching wrestling again. Hulk Hogan appeared to be like somewhat cool again. Who would have thunk that? But obviously it was, you know, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash that really, you know,
They sold it.
They sold it, and they changed, you know, they changed the industry forever in that particular time of history. After that, then I started to, lose interest, saying, well, you know, I guess I have to, like, grow up or something, you know, do the adult thing. But you know, after that, like, the WWF, you know, did love, like, The Rock and Austin. That was, you know, that era was, like, you know, the Attitude Era was amazing. Like, D-Generation X, oh, yeah, that was amazing. But, you know, once that started to, like, you know, moving away, I started to, like, not watch a lot of wrestling until, like, you know, I did see this guy, young guy, like, around my age in TNA, whose name is AJ Styles. And yeah. I was like, dude, what is he doing? This is crazy. That guy was, I mean, he still is. But, like, in that, you know, during when he was young, oh, my God, him and Samoa Joe. Oh, wow. That was impressive. So I got into, like, TNA again. But then, you know, with pretty much also what happened with, like, the WWE, the older guys started to, you know, take over, which happened, like, in TNA. And then you see Hall, Nash. This is, like, there wasn't, like, a real balance. So I started to lose interest again. And that is until a couple of years ago, I got back into it again because of my daughter, actually. I do have to say. Started, like, you know, I forget who said, like, you know, with the Women's Revolution. And I started watching, like, oh, wow, man, these female wrestlers are, like, good. And then, you know, my daughter started, like, sitting with me. And she started looking specifically at Becky Lynch. Like, she just could not take her eyes off, you know, off of her. It was like, you know, to this day, she still does. She's like her number one fan right now. And so, yeah, it's been kind of like a roller coaster, you know, in and out, you know, because specifically, you know, when it got to that, the aggression era, I forgot what it was called.
Ruthless aggression.
Ruthless aggression. Yep.
That's what we called it.
I really lost interest there. And, like, basically, for me in that era, who was, like, probably Lita and Trish Stratus were actually the ones that were, you know, giving me some sort of interest, you know, to actually watch a match, just a match, not even, like, the whole show or anything like that. And, yeah, I did miss, I will say, though, that because, you know, I lost interest, I did miss, the pipe bomb with and all that era. I did miss it. Oof. And I did miss the beginning of, like, Daniel Bryan, and that I, like, kicked myself every time for that one. But, you know, again, you know, this past couple of years watching, you know, like, the female revolution, and actually I will have to say the talent that has been going in NXT specifically, it's been amazing. I know that, you know, once they, like, you know, go to, like, you know, like, they call them up, they, like, pretty much botch it, like, 90% of the time. But, right, like, but, like, the talent there is very impressive. And now, right now, NXT is my favorite, wrestling show to watch. But, you know, I'm still waiting for AEW to see what happens there.
Yep.
Love Kenny Omega, that dude rocks.
So, oh, man. And we're going to talk about that right now. So, Phil, have you been following the AEW stuff at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been following AEW a little bit. You know, I know it's a concept with you know, Cody Rhodes and his wife and, you know, the Young Bucks, and they're getting, you know, basically the Bullet Club minus Finn and minus what's the guy's names?
Well, so they split off. So the Bullet Club, which was a New Japan Pro Wrestling faction. Right. So originally AJ Styles was the leader of that. And he left for WWE, and then Kenny Omega replaced him. And then...
Well. Actually, Finn Balor put...
Well, Finn Balor started the Bullet Club.
Balor,
yes.
He was the original leader.
Well, he was...
I'm going to be a stickler.
He was Prince Devitt at the time. So
he was the original.
Prince Devitt, who became Finn Balor. He started the Bullet Club, left. AJ Styles replaced him. Kenny Omega replaced him. But when... What became the core of what was the Bullet Club was when the Young Bucks came in, and then Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, along with a couple of others, formed a group called the Elite, which was within the Bullet Club. So the Elite then sort of became their own thing. So now, fast forward to all this time, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, Marty Scurll, who's still under contract to Ring of Honor for now. They're the Elite. They start this show called Being the Elite on YouTube, which starts getting hundreds of thousands of viewers. It generates this grassroots movement. And then Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks decide to run a show on their own, which was All In, which sold out in minutes, 10,000 plus seats in Chicago. And the rest is history. So now AEW is a thing, and it's its own promotion, owned by the Khan family, lots of money behind it. They're running their first show May 25th called Double or Nothing in Las Vegas, which I will be attending. Very excited about that.
Nice.
And
nice.
Yeah. And so the buzz that they're generating based off of a couple of press conferences has been absolutely incredible. And I mean, I know Nathan has spoke about how excited it's generated a lot of excitement for him. It's kind of brought him back into this whole thing. And I know him and I have spoken a little bit about independent wrestling as well. Like he's started to discover some independent wrestling as well. But like, where is everybody with, I know Tavo's familiar with the whole AEW thing. Where are we right now with independent wrestling? Phil, are you doing, do you follow indies?
I do follow the indies a little bit. I've been watching the New Japan stuff. I know about CZW, Combat Zone Wrestling. They got the Empire Wrestling up here, and obviously AEW. I'm not deep into it, but I know of certain things. But for so long I was integrated with the WWE brand, but who was coming up, and then who you had to know. So that's where my level of fandom is. I am starting to get back a little bit into it since I've been gone, because I think I found myself, after years of being there, I actually found myself not interested in wrestling at working at my dream company. And that's because I saw a lot of the political stuff that you guys hated. And I saw it from on my side, but I understood from a business end and from a fan end. So I waned a little bit, but now that I've been gone, I've had a little bit of resurgence, and it's because of AEW, and it's because of the women and what's happening. So that's where my level of fandom is. I'm definitely high level, but I know enough about the indies of what's going on.
Okay. So, and that's the thing is, so the landscape of pro wrestling is shifting right now, majorly, right? And AEW is a big catalyst for that. And the reason is now you have AEW, you have WWE, you have Ring of Honor, you have New Japan Pro Wrestling, and you still have Impact Wrestling. Four companies right now that are paying wrestlers full-time to become full-time pro wrestlers, right? You can sign a contract with those promotions and make a full-time living as a pro wrestler, which is a fantastic thing for the talent, and it's also a great thing for the fans, as long as you don't mind having your talent spread out over multiple places. And then you have smaller companies like MLW, which are also signing wrestlers to contracts. They're not making a full-time living doing that, but they're, you know, that's a promotion that's run by a couple of former WWE creative executives. And so you're gaining a lot of experience. They have a television deal on beIN Sports. You're learning from people who have worked in WWE on the creative end. So it's an invaluable experience. So it's a great time right now to be a talent in pro wrestling, as opposed to a few years ago, where your options were you were an indie star, and then maybe you could get to Japan, or maybe you could get to NXT with the hopes of eventually getting to the main roster in WWE. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good time right now to be a wrestler, and it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. But I want to go around here and see What is it, and we'll start with Tavo, what is it that has you the most excited about AEW? Because right now it's really just a concept. They haven't run their first official show yet. So what has you the most excited about it?
Right now, I would say the talent that they are, you know, they are getting. My example of, like, say, when I, you know, when I've seen WWE, like, kind of screwing up, like, major talent, when the one specific right now that comes to mind is Neville. That guy's amazing. That guy is, like, top-notch, can do no wrong. And when they turned him heel, that was actually a good move. But they stuck him in, like, the 205 Live division, which their wrestling is amazing. It's fantastic, but it's really not going anywhere because they don't know what to do with it. Like, you can't tell that they really don't know what they're doing, to the point that, for example, one of their best wrestlers, Mustafa Ali, is actually in SmackDown right now. And all of a sudden, you know, when they're signing, you know, doing the rosters, you see, oh, Pac. And then you see him coming out. Oh, my shit, it's fucking Neville. it's Neville. You know, and that actually had me more excited than even, like, the signing of Chris Jericho, for which I still love. That dude, you know, still, for some reason, doesn't age whatsoever. So, like, I guess my main thing would be the talent. Then, and also include the, I forget the name that they're using, but it's like the brothers, the Mexican brothers.
The Lucha brothers, yeah. The Pentagon and Rey Phoenix.
The first, yeah. Actually, the funny thing is the first time I saw Pentagon was in El Rey's
Lucha Underground.
Lucha Underground. Yeah. Dude, Cero Miedo, oh my, that guy is amazing. You know, a great wrestler and excellent character work. And, you know, getting him and his brother, you know, that just, you know, for tag team division alone, that's just, you know, totally worth it. So right now would be talent.
Right. Okay. It's interesting you bring up Pac or Neville, but because that you discovered him, I'm assuming, through WWE when he was Neville, not. You probably weren't familiar with him as Pac before he signed with WWE, but you...
No. Like, my independent wrestling has been very somewhat limited.
Right.
I will say this. Although, I did discover one independent here in South Carolina, so every time they, you know, they have a show, I try to take Adriana. I think they have one... I think it's by the end of this month. And they actually got Johnny Morrison to appear on it. So that's pretty cool.
But it's cool, though, that you though, did identify him right away when he comes out as, oh, that's Neville, and I'm excited because I identify him as a great talent, even though he was kind of underutilized. So that's a cool thing.
Extremely underutilized.
Yeah. Speaking of underutilized, by the way, another thing to show you how this AEW thing is changing thing is the fact that Dean Ambrose announced that he is not going to be re-signing with WWE, and WWE publicly acknowledged it, which is something they never do. They basically said he is not re-signing with us, and we wish him well, and everyone assumes he's headed to AEW. And one of the reasons why he decided to leave is because he felt like he was tired of scripted promos. And because that's a guy that when he was John Moxley on the independent scene was known for his promos. His promo work stood out because on indies, promos aren't necessarily something that stands out. It's more work rate. So it'll be interesting to see. But this is the times that we live in now where people care again for the first time, probably since the Monday Night Wars, about when people's contracts are up, because it actually means something now, which is interesting. But let's go to Nathan. Nathan, what has you most excited about AEW?
Well, real quick, to make an analogy, I put it like this. It's WWE had everybody looking to the left over here for so long, and all of a sudden AEW made this big smack and clap over here to the right and got so many heads to turn, and I think that's just great, first of all. And what has me excited is, like Tavo said, is the talent that they're attracting to this thing. Because I may not be well super versed in the mega indies, but all the main companies you named off, I see all their stuff there. I'll stumble across stuff on YouTube It'll just be a random, like, hey, check this out, and I'll see a crazy move that I've done, and I go, wow, if I could see more of this guy, I would definitely check him out just from the work that I see on that. But like he said, that the talent that they're seeming to draw in there, like Neville Pac, like, my God, fantastic. I'm fantastic where he was. They put the they put NXT on his back when he was in NXT, and he carried it in stride. Yeah. Carried it in stride. And then they bumped him up, and Vince did what he normally does and doesn't know what to do and tried to make him the superhero guy with a cape even.
It did not work.
But as soon as he went heel, like, everybody went, holy, look at this guy. That's where he needs to live. That's his comfort zone. And when he grew that beard out and he just put them black trunks on, came out there with no nonsense, you went, this guy, he's there. Don't pigeonhole him to cruiserweights. Let this guy go. Let him work with some of the big guys, the guys that he could wake up again, you know, on the upper guys, you know, the middle guys, the top tier guys. And like you said, the Lucha Brothers, Pentagon and Phoenix, like those guys are something special.
Yeah.
But I think we should also talk that they're not signed, they're not exclusive. They got contracts where they can still go out and work other places because they're still going to be able to work for Impact.
Yes.
And I think a couple of other maybe small ones. But if I was to guess, I would bet the wording in their contract says AEW comes first. If I was just guessing, that's my speculation. But that Dr. Britt Baker, she's fantastic. Like the women that they're going to address, that they're going to attract over there. Jericho, I think, is going to find a second life because we're going to see Alpha Omega, and we're going to see that again. And those Jericho and Kenny Omega are going to go. I think they're going to really go over the top to, you know, eventually whenever they build up to it, where we're going to see that Alpha Omega again, and it's going to be something special. Hangman Page, he's going to be able to let loose the villain Marty Scurll. Like, I know these are a lot of the elite guys, which is why they made their group, and we all know they're fantastic, but just the talent they're attracting to work with and these people that they're going to bring in from these little companies, promotions that I've never heard of that I'm going to experience and see. Because, you know, these guys are smart. They're going to find a way to put their product out there, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be, you know, they're going to put these little small shows, these small shows, matches, something out there to where, you know, who knows, in a year from now or whatever, we might be talking about some kind of small TV deal or something. You know, this is all just small stuff. They're planting the seeds, but if they water this right and they get the right creative and they keep it as pure as they're saying, I mean, this could be the best thing to happen to wrestling since the Monday Night Wars, period.
Yeah.
So, and Phil, what about you? Where's your, what has you most excited about AEW?
I mean, the fact that Cody, and who's with WWE for so long, amazing talent, come from a great pedigree family, and you saw that, you kind of saw that hint of stardom when they had the rivalry with him and Dustin, and Dusty came out, and they had the rivalry going on, and they had a great match when he walked out and cut that scathing promo. I can't remember. It was great. You saw that. And then they kind of had gold and they wasted it. And then he just got fed up and just left. Yeah. And now you see that, you know,
Stardust.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? Here's the thing though, that I will always say about Cody. They gave him that crappy thing about Stardust, but he went there 110%. Like,
oh yeah.
He probably knew, like, this is crap, but I'm going to give it.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes I mean, he gave it his all, and that shows the level of commitment. But the fact that he left WWE, and everybody was like, oh, he's going to jump to TNA, but no, went to New Japan, hooked up with these guys, and now we're at this point. And I got to be honest, like, I knew of AEW, but what really kind of drew me in was actually this, the comic book side, was Stephen Amell when he fought.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know. And I saw Stephen Amell posted it on his Twitter, and he said, you know, had an amazing, he's, you know, talking about fighting Christopher Daniels. I'm like, wait a minute, he's fighting Christopher Daniels? I was like, I had to watch it. So I actually watched the IPPV. I was blown away, and I'm like,
fantastic.
I was like, these guys are bringing it to a different level, and I think a lot of it is what I'm seeing from being on the business side and being the fan side, the hand holding is there. These guys are like off the leash. And it's kind of reminds me of that time with the attitude era. Take out the cursing and the TNA, but it was more of like, you know, I hear Austin talk about in his podcast about how he wasn't stronghold into cutting a promo based on what the guys were writing for him.
Right.
He was given bullet points. All those guys were given bullet points, and then they just went off. Now it's more script, like stick to the script. I mean, sometimes you can even catch some of the guys looking down at their wrists, reading the promo off their wrists. If you really,
the best characters are the ones that are themselves just turned up to 11 because they get bullet points and they get to run wild and just themselves.
I mean, the most compelling talker in WWE is not even a wrestler. It's Paul Heyman.
Yeah, that's right.
Come on. Yeah. I mean, and I'm telling you, Paul gets bullet points. They don't even write for him. They just tell him these are the notes you need to hit, Paul, and Paul just goes out there and does it. And the fact that a lot of the up and coming guys aren't doing that, and I think it's because of there is this sense of I shouldn't say now, but a few years ago there was a sense of like, where am I gonna go? I gotta do right. I gotta do what they're telling me. But now, like you said, Nathan, you know, all of a sudden there's this lightning strike on this other side of the continent, and it's like, wait a minute, I can go here, I can go there, and the landscape is changing, and you know, WWE is going to have competition. I mean, like legit competition now, which they haven't had in over a decade.
Right, yeah. and that's assuming, and we are assuming it, but assuming that AEW can land themselves an actual real TV deal, which, based on the money that's behind this promotion and the fact that, you know, All In was kind of sort of a pilot for this. It was the catalyst. It was the fact that they got that on WGN America. I mean, as an unknown entity, they got the pre-show on WGN America. That raised some eyebrows. So the thought is that they will get a TV deal. But once that happens, we'll have a clear indication of just how much of competition this thing is going to be.
I mean, yeah, I think there might be a thirst. I mean, Fox Sports is picking up WWE and all its assets. I think next year that deal goes through, and it's a couple of $100 million. Yeah. So, you know, USA is losing sort of a prime time staple in their programming. I mean,
And to add to that, probably Fox Sports would probably, like, I will say poach the better talent, the WWE better talent to their, you know, to their channel, because that's the way to sell it, you know?
So I think there's definitely down the road there might be deals. You know, if these guys prove that they are a presence online, you know, on a digital, they proved to be a digital presence. I can't see why they wouldn't get a TV deal at some point.
You know, I think it's going to happen sooner than later. Just a matter of what is it and where is it and how big is it? And that'll determine, like, really where the competition is. But as far as hype and as far as ability to sell tickets and as the ability to sell merchandise, I mean, the Young Bucks have been living off of their merchandise sales for the last few years now, because they're selling such an incredible amount of merchandise. I mean, they were the ones who got the Bullet Club merchandise and their merchandise in Hot Topic stores, you know, which was the thing that took it to the next level. And Pro Wrestling Tees right now is, you know, making a fortune as being the, you know, the distributor of Young Bucks and Elite and Bullet Club merchandise and New Japan merchandise in this country. And I mean, the merchandising alone has been amazing. And it's, you know, I was talking to Paul about it earlier, like, wrestling used to be about selling product, right? It used to be about people going to shows, paying for tickets to the show, paying for tickets, paying for t-shirts, paying for things, and instead of just paying for a subscription to a network and just watching TV product. You know, wrestling used to be about people spending money on things, and that's what the Young Bucks and Cody and these guys have done again, and that's what AEW seems like it's going to be about, even though ultimately it will still be a TV product. But, I mean, they're moving merchandise. They're putting butts in seats, at least for now, and that's refreshing to see. The thing I like about it, though, is the story. So this is a group of people that bet on themselves, and so far they're winning. And, you know, the Young Bucks, people, old timers like Jim Cornette used to say the Young Bucks, they're just flippy guys. They're never going to put butts in seats. They're never going to be more than just indie darlings. You know, Kenny Omega was in WWE developmental back in the Deep South wrestling days, you know, and had to, then he left and worked his way up through Japan. You know, if you look at Cody, obviously we know his story. I mean, he just said, I'm out. I'm going to hit the indie scene, and I'm going to see what holds for me. And, you know, Cody, when he first started hitting the indies, was not welcome with open arms. You know, people forget that now. Like, in the beginning, it was like, oh, you know, this guy's not indie quality. Why is he in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla's Battle of Los Angeles? You know, he's not up to the level of these guys. And he earned it. He made a reputation for himself by showing that he was passionate about this. And he wasn't a guy that was hitting the indie scene as a name just to capitalize and to make some quick money, hoping WWE would take him back. He certainly flipped the script on that one. Now he's taking them on. And that's what's inspirational about this. And I think that kind of that, I mean, it's as punk rock as you could be when you have $6 billion of funding behind you. But assuming, I mean, obviously they're not putting $6 billion into it, but that's what the Khan family is worth that technically owns this thing. But it's a punk rock mentality of betting on yourself, doing things on your own terms, and so far coming up aces. And well, that's what I think has people excited about it.
To speak to that, the Khan family, they're not dumb. They didn't get that money by making bad investments.
No.
I don't think they would go in, and they would not back these guys as publicly and be out there at that press conference if they did not have complete faith that they were going to be able to, you know, make buku bucks off of their investment, which is what they're investing a lot of money in these guys, just even putting themselves attached so closely to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why the Chris Jericho thing was good for them. You know, when I was first mentioning this to Aaron a few weeks ago on the show, you know, he was like, wait, Chris Jericho? Like, does anybody care about him anymore?
And, oh, yeah.
You know, if you're somebody that hasn't really followed wrestling that closely for a while, people don't realize that. I mean, Chris Jericho has reinvented himself through New Japan Pro Wrestling. I mean, he is the Chris Jericho that's in New Japan is a completely different animal than the one that we were used to seeing in WWE and WCW before that. And he is as relevant now, if not in some ways more so than he was even a few years ago.
Absolutely.
Best thing he ever did was go to New Japan.
Yeah.
Well, back there, you know.
Yeah. You know what? Jericho, for all his incarnations, he just keeps reinventing himself, and he just remains relevant, and it amazes me, because I mean, in his WCW days, his Lionheart Chris Jericho, I was like, this guy's a joke. But when he had, I mean, I'm gonna throw it back real back, when he's had his feud with Dean Malenko, and he did his man of a 1,004 moves promo.
Yeah.
And one of the best.
In the ring.
One of the best.
And he's beating off armbar.
They come back from commercial and he's still reading his list.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm like, who is this guy? And, you know, started to take notice. And then, you know, I mean, I'm sure you guys remember, but how big of a deal it was when he jumped ship to WWF.
Oh man, you know, it was huge.
And then he had a hard time. You know, he cut that promo, came on the scene, made a big splash, got killed in his first promo by The Rock.
Destroyed.
Destroyed. And you know, for him to come back and became relevant and headline Mania, leave, go do his band with Fozzy and still come back time after time. His feud with when he came back and feuded with Punk, great. When he came back and he's, you know, teamed up with Kevin Owens. Every time it's, you know, there's something iconic about each of his runs. And the fact that he left, went to New Japan, it's another iconic thing. And then he's standing there with his AEW press conference, and it's like, and automatically, for me as a Jericho-holic, I'm like,
yeah,
I was like, I'm interested. I mean, I was interested with Cody and everything and the Young Bucks, but then when I see Jericho come out and he's like, I'm all in, I'm like, okay, you got this guy who does nothing but reinvent himself and stay relevant. And he's all about it. And he's, you know, he comes out on his podcast and he's like, these guys got a passion. He's got a passion that he hasn't seen in a very long time. And it gets you excited. Cause you look at the guys, you know, you look at the guys at WWE and they're like, there's passion, but there's a little bit of, some of it is stunted. And
absolutely.
And that's why you got to, I'm still hoping, but I have a feeling the Dean Ambrose thing is probably a work, but if it's not,
it's definitely not a work.
No, they let out a press release
and they're burying him.
The weirdest,
right now.
It was still the weirdest thing I've seen WWE do. That's why I always also thought it was like a work or something, because you don't do that like at all. And
never.
Then he used his real name on the on the press release. I was like, what? Yeah. It was shocking.
Part of me was like, maybe it's a work, because I was like, I was there for a while and I was like, I don't recall them ever putting it out like that the way they did. And, you know, a buddy of mine was like, no, that's not true. We've done it in the past. I'm like, we have? I was like, maybe I don't recall, but, you know.
Yeah, well, it's just that it's, like I said before, this is the first time in a long time where something like this has meant something. Because in the past, you would say, well, that's got to be a work, because where's he going?
Yeah, where, like you said, they were relegated to the indie scene. There was no other viable options.
But now, I mean, he has a ton of options for where he could go, and all of them are viable. Absolutely. So that's why now you're going to start taking this stuff seriously. I mean, people know now, like we could say, oh, well, Marty Scurll's contract with Ring of Honor is up at the end of the year. We're going to assume he's going to go join with his fellow elite partners in AEW at the end of that year, right? You can sit there and start to say, like, well, a guy like Seth Rollins, like, his contract's up at the end of the year, you know, so on and so forth. And
AJ Styles, they're negotiating his right now.
Well, they're trying to renegotiate with everybody right now for obvious reasons.
They're backing up a dump truck to Styles' house. You know they're not going to let him go.
Right.
But isn't that what, like, that's what I heard, though, that WWE was starting to speak with, like, the their talent that, you know, their contract is, like, extremely close to, you know, to expire. So they're starting to, like, you know, try to, like, lock these guys up.
They're having emergency meetings, and why not? I mean, because, again, there's a player in town now, and from the reports that are out there, I mean, these AEW contracts, considering they haven't run an actual official show yet, are serious contracts.
When they
said that they were going to change the financial landscape of pro wrestling, they were not kidding. Based on what we're reading about, as far as what these contracts are worth for some guys that they haven't even announced yet, and some people that a lot of people wouldn't even know of. So I mean, this is an interesting time now, and I don't know at this point why you wouldn't want to go free agent. I mean, barring injury, of course.
Did you guys hear about Double or Nothing's ticket sales, or was it pre-ticket sales sold out?
Yeah, in 30 minutes. Yeah, the pre-sale.
Had friends that were buying them, and just like Vanessa, was it right, Chris?
Vanessa couldn't get hers.
Get any.
I waited on, like, they put you in a line on the Access Ticket website. And I was online for an hour, and I could only get one ticket. Like, it wouldn't even let me buy more than one ticket.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. I mean, really, I know it sucks for, you know, trying to get two, but that's fantastic when you look at how they're selling this thing and how their ticket sales are going. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and the key is going to be, right now it's a novelty. So ultimately, you know, over the long haul, how they choose to run this promotion and how they choose to go about it. Like, you know, you're not going to be able to do this every time. I mean, we saw it even with the hottest promotions, WWE at their peak, WCW at their peak, when they were doing sellout after sellout after sellout. Eventually, you have to you know, start to shift and you know, change with the times, because you can't, there's not going to be a, you can only have one first time, right? So, yeah, I think eventually we'll see, like, you know, do they continue these 30-minute sellouts all over the place? There's never been a promotion that's been able to sustain that over the long haul, whether it be in this country or in Japan. But, you know, hopefully they don't go under. You know, hopefully they don't go under and crumble under the weight of all of this success that they're having early, like some of those other promotions, like, you know, K1 at its peak in Japan, and like, which was a kickboxing promotion that was selling out domes in 30 minutes, like every, you know, month, it seemed like, at one point, or like WCW at their heyday. Or even now, if you look at WWE ticket sales relative to, I mean, it's such an insignificant thing for them now because of how much they're worth as a publicly traded company now. But, like, you know, I mean, there was a time where they were selling out events left and right, and now that's not a thing anymore. So we'll see how long it lasts, but I hope it does.
Well, I mean, at least for WWE, like, the last time this happened to them was, you know, the Monday Night Wars, and they actually got creative, you know.
Well, yeah, when go figure.
Had, like, competition, which is, like, sure, a good thing, you know. So we're like, I'm hoping that WWE, you know, takes this, you know, serious, like, very serious, and starts to do, you know, what they did before, you know, get more creative. Like, for example, right now, I will say that the NXT product works perfectly, not just because it's like it's because it's a mix between young and, you know, older talent.
Decent.
But but at the same time, you don't have to see them every week. You know, Tommaso Ciampa, he's not there, like, week in, you know, like, every single week. Yes. You know, and you see that through the tapings, you know. It's like, he'll be there 1 week, then maybe not there for, like, one or two, so they can put other talent, you know, up front and center, and, you know, and give them an opportunity. And then he'll come back and he won't, like, he's not missed. He's like, oh, man, he's back. Awesome. Fantastic.
Well, that.
And while, like, the big leagues, you know, the only thing you see is, like, the big talent every single week. And don't get me wrong, man. Some of them, you know, it's fantastic. It's great, you know. But at the same time, they don't really give up, you know, opportunity to, like, say, like, a mid-card. They don't even have a mid-card anymore.
Right?
I mean, seriously. Not really. Do they have a mid-card right now?
Not really.
No.
I mean, the thing is, what tapings do allow you to do also is it forces you to do long-term storytelling.
Yeah.
Which is a lost art now in WWE, because you lock in. You tape a month's worth of television at one time. You don't have, you know, that knee-jerk reaction based on ratings to have to change something week to week. So you're forced to tell your story.
For the day.
Yeah.
Well, I think the keys for AEW, they're going to have the right management in the back and the right key creative talents. They're going to have a mixture of that old and young thinking. Because, you know, Triple H did build NXT up right, but he was also smart enough to still have that young input to where he can keep with the trends. I honestly think if you put NXT, 2 hours of NXT up against Raw, it'll take Raw down in a year. Give it 1 year period, it would burn Raw to the ground if you kept the same creative team. Man.
I say absolutely.
If they put them, you know, 2 hours, give NXT 2 hours on Monday night, it'll burn the 3 hour Raw down over a year's time. I guarantee it.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah.
I don't disagree with that at all either.
Adriana even thinks so too.
I don't even like NXT at all.
All right, guys. So listen, I could sit here and talk about this stuff all day, all night, but we're going to have to wind this thing down right now. So I just want to thank all of you guys for joining me on this show. We're going to do this again. We're going to have to do this again at some point, maybe before Double or Nothing. We'll do another one of these. But
we got to do it before WrestleMania.
Oh, well, we could do that too. You know what? I forgot about WrestleMania.
I don't know if Varela told you, me and him are going.
I saw that. I'm actually going to be in Costa Rica during WrestleMania. I did see that you guys are going.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
Chris, I just wanted to say that I'm mega jealous you're going to Double or Nothing. My jealousy's so ugly, I'm glad you can't see it.
Yeah, that's true, man.
I hope you have a great time. Thanks. It's going to be a good show.
But yeah.
All right. So, guys, thanks again. And, you know, we'll be talking on Twitter. We're going to be, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discussion going on in the next few months. And we'll figure out another time to do this again. Maybe we'll do this as like a, we'll do a supplement episode one week where we just sit down and talk about wrestling if something major comes along. But thanks again, guys. And
thank you so much for having
me. No problem.
Yeah, and, man, it's an honor, man. Thank you.
Thank
and as
you.
Chris Jericho says, I'm all in to do it.
Yeah, oh, me yeah. too, anytime.
Excellent. All right. And everyone, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.